Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend in the Crescent City. Hey, we're doing the NOLA Drinks Show. We're not out on some golf course throwing out bombastic proclamations of fire and fury. No, sir, we're just exploring the world of drink and food in New Orleans and beyond. Yes, now I will say, I'd like to say that our pumps are operating up to capacity. They're probably not, and we probably are ad-libbing our way through a lot of this. But anyway, we got a good show for you today. I think it's a very interesting show. We're at our good friend's place, Barrel Proof, which is primarily a whiskey bar. They have almost 300 whiskeys in there, but good beers and tequila and wine and other things. Pop-up restaurant that they have going on. That's, so I like to say, in the lower Garden District. It's at 1201 Magazine Street. I've been there for a little bit over 3 years. Great place, operated by our friends from the LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group. And we were talking about bourbon. That's pretty much what the show's about today. Good thing, right? We're just going to keep it to bourbon. And who we talk with is, first off, we have Tracy Napolitano. And Tracy is the executive director of the New Orleans Bourbon Festival. Now, the first version of the New Orleans Bourbon Festival was last year, and it was a very good event. Yeah, you'd think, you know, I've said this before, but you'd think, hey, it's New Orleans. We'd probably have had a bourbon festival already. We have a festival for lots of things here. And, well, we didn't. And they put on a really, really good one. A lot of heavy hitters from the world of bourbon came down from Kentucky to participate, and it was great. They had two evenings of grand tasting, a day of seminars, all this stuff. And the 2018 event is already on tap. It kicks off, I believe, March 8th, and it was at the Sugar Mill last year. They're moving it to the Meridian Hotel and the Contemporary Arts Center. It's where the tastings are going to be. But Tracy comes on the show to talk a little bit about last year's event, this year's event. They're expanding the seminars. Here's an important thing. They're making the hours of the seminars more friendly. Last year, they were on Saturday, and they started pretty early. After the Friday Grand Tasting of bourbon, you might imagine that that was a little bit hard to get to. I was living proof. It was a struggle to get to the first seminar that I went to. But the seminars are very interesting, very well done. So what they're doing is spreading them out over a couple days and also starting them a little later. Good move, Tracy and gang there. So we talk with him for a little bit, then Tracy sticks on the show, and our good pal and friend of the show, Liam Deegan, who is the co-proprietor there of Barrel Proof, then joins us, and we sort of have a roundtable conversation about bourbon, and we talk about some interesting things. We talk about trends in the industry. We talk about the uptick, if you will, of craft distillers in the bourbon world. We also talk about how, you know, really it's still a landscape that's dominated by about 10 distilleries or so that kind of own pretty much everything and all the labels and so some of the considerations of being a craft distiller. We talk some of the history of the distillate. We talk a little bit about supply and demand. We talk about what is bourbon versus other forms of whiskey. Don't go too far down that road because we've covered that pretty well on the show before. But lots of interesting things like that. We also touch, I think an interesting part of the conversation is we touch on fraud in the secondary and gray markets there for bourbon. And, you know, we talk about different things on that level as well. So it's a really, really interesting conversation with Tracy and Liam talking about the world of bourbon. So stay tuned for that. And then we actually close out that round of interviews there with just Liam. We talk a little bit further about what's going on at Barrel Proof and why that's a place that you need to go. If you like bourbon and if you like whiskey here in this town, and you like, you know, they got food and stuff. Like I said, they do the pop-up most evenings there. It's a really cool place. Again, 1201 Magazine Street. So that was a lot of fun to do that. And then we'll close out the show with a little bit of news and other things. Friends, some stuff going on here this weekend that we definitely want to get to. Two big events. We know this. There are always events in New Orleans, and I think it's really important. One thing that I do want to mention also, just a little public service announcement here, if you will, is, and I don't know what the status is now exactly, but this morning, NOLA Ready, which is the government project here that sends out text messages that keep us alert here. Sometimes I think the name NOLA Ready somewhat ironic, especially in the case of this one. We're talking about a message that came out from the Sewerage and Water Board that there's a reported outage of power outages at some of the pump stations, and it's lowering the pump capacity for the East Bank of New Orleans, which is, of course, New Orleans, west of the Industrial Canal. And so they're warning that if there's rain, you might want to move your car to a high ground. Don't be driving through water what appears to be deep water. Your car can get stuck. Don't try not to drive in the rains. Don't go out if you don't have to. This does not affect New Orleans East, the lower nine, or Algiers. And that's always, you know, good advice, friends, is that, you know, move your car to higher ground, stay in if you possibly can. Be mindful of when you're on the roads, what's going on. Don't drive through what seems to be rising or rushing water, all that good stuff. And also remember, friends, drive courteously in the rain. Okay, here's the law, it's been law for a while now. If your windshield wipers are on, your headlights need to be on. Not just your daytime safety lights, because part of the idea here is if you want to show the cars behind you where you are. So having your taillights on that come on when your headlights are on is part of the deal. Wipers on, headlights on, okay? Use your turn signal so people know what you're doing, changing lanes, all that good stuff. Let's be courteous. Let's be safe out there. We might get a little bit of rain, you know, here and there today, so we'll see what goes on, but just a good bits of safety there. So here's one of the events anyway, moving right along from, there's our public service message for the show. Red Dress Run is going on here on Saturday. Kind of a fun event. It's put on by the Hash House Harriers. They're an organization that started way back when, I believe in the 1930s, if I'm not mistaken, and has sort of started they're an international group of non-competitive, if you will, running social clubs, and they basically do these things, a hash run or hashing, if you want to call it that. I believe way back when with the history of the organization was that, December 1938, and it was supposed to be kind of a little bit more sort of health oriented. It's always been sort of tongue in cheek, you know, is to promote physical fitness among the members and to get rid of weekend hangovers, and then, you know, drink beer. So a lot of these runs, you know, a couple miles, that sort of thing, just like this one that's going on here in New Orleans the day after tomorrow, is, you know, you make beer stops. Okay. It involves running and beer, and then it involves the red dress. So anybody, male, female, however you identify yourself, you wear a red dress and get out there and run. And it's a two-mile run, roughly. They don't announce the route. It's kind of a secret. You're sort of led along the way. This used to start at Armstrong Park, friends, and this year, just a heads up, is that it's actually starting at Crescent Park, which is the park right there along the Mississippi River, right where Elysian Fields dead ends at the river at Decatur, more or less, is where the entrance is. That's where you're going to want to go check that out. And here's the important part about this event. It's really a lot of fun. Starts pretty early in the morning. I think the race starts at 11, but the party starts at about 9. It's about $80. The online registration is closed. Okay, so you can no longer get online and register, but what you can do there is an expo that's going on today from 4:30 to 9 p.m. and then also tomorrow all day from 4 to 9, and that's at the Fairgrounds racetrack. You can go there and you can still register for the event. I believe it's about $80. You pay a little bit more for late registration, $5, something like that, not too much. You go, wow, that's a lot of money. Well, what it includes, beer. Okay, I think pretty much all the beer you can drink. And then it includes food. And they previously, my understanding was that they had one particular food vendor who did barbecue. Now they have a whole bunch, a good 10 or 12 or so food vendors that are going to be out there. And well, they're not vendors because you get food. So they're broadening the event. It's out there at Crescent Park. Nice cool breeze is coming off the river. But that $80 also, it's a charitable event. They raise money for more than 100 charities. And typically they raise well over $100,000 every time they do this. And, a lot of people, why I'm telling you all this is because lots of times people pop into the race, they put a red dress on and kind of pirate their way in, if you will. And, you know, it's kind of a fun thing. People, they don't make a huge fuss about this, but part of this is for charity. And if you don't pay the fee, you know, you can't go hang out at Crescent Park and get all the beer and the food. They have music. The Brassaholics, who are a fantastic band here in New Orleans, are leading the charge for the entertainment. So that's going to be a lot of fun. There's also like a lingerie run that goes on tomorrow evening, I believe, a get rid of the hangover run on Sunday. So a whole bunch of things. If you're interested in more on that, and I'm not going to get into the history or anything like that. It's an interesting story. It goes back to the 80s, I believe, in California, Southern California, how the Red Dress Run got started. But it's all there on their website. And the website is NOLAREDDRESS.com. go check that out. Yes, go to the racetrack either this evening or tomorrow, and you can still get involved with the fun on Saturday morning. And we'll talk about it at the end of the show. We'll get into a Dirty Linen Night. We're going to take a break here in just a second. What we're going to do then is we're going to come back with the stuff that I mentioned before. We're talking about bourbon friends here on the Noel Drink Show. Tracy Napolitano from the New Orleans Bourbon Festival, as I mentioned, and then we're joined by Liam Deegan of Barrel Proof. So, hey, give yourself a little pour of bourbon. Kick up your legs, sit back in a chair, and hey, come on back. On a mountain, I look down on the sea. I seen the crabs and the fishes doing a beep-bop-beep, cause my bucket's got a hole.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu,
life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bageau heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
I wonder why my baby drinks so much wine. If she keeps a drinking, she's gonna lose her mind. She's a wine-head woman, don't you know? She's a wine-head woman, don't you know?
I hate. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. And in the podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening to the show. However you two choose to tune in to the Noel Drink Show, I appreciate it. As you know, today we're talking about bourbon. Yeah, one of my favorite things. And we are here now at Barrel Proof. So if you're in New Orleans and you want bourbon, this is the place to be right here at the 1200 block of Magazine Street. And pleased to be chatting with Tracy Napolitano. Speaking of bourbon, the organizer, executive director of the New Orleans Bourbon Festival, man. Welcome.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely. So, Tracy, last year was the first iteration of the New Orleans Bourbon Festival. It's one of the things I always say on the show, too, and we talked about it before. Hard to believe that we didn't have one of those here, but right now we do.
Yeah, it was. I mean, everyone says the same thing. And like I think I said last, when we talked last time, when I reached out to some people in Kentucky, like Michael Veach, and said, it's the perfect place to have a bourbon festival outside of Kentucky. It's when I ran with it. And we got a lot of great press nationally, USA Today, MarthaStewart.com, Huffington Post, liquor.com, all wrote stories about us. So we're ready to go, get ready. You know, we're gearing up now, setting up next year. So
for 2018, yeah. We'll talk more specifics on that, but that's coming up first week or second week actually of March in 2018. So you guys getting a leg up on it. It was a really good event last year, man. I obviously went, as you know, and you did two evenings of grand tasting. And which was really well done. We'll get to that. One of the things that I really liked about the event, Tracy, were the fact that you all did seminars and the people that showed up to actually lead these seminars. You had some great people come to do this.
We did. We had some pretty heavy hitters in the Absolutely. In the bourbon world. And as one person told us from the, I think it was Adam from the Kentucky Distillers Association. He told us it looks like we went in and raided Kentucky of all of their best. And, you know, right. If you look at the lineup from last year, that's exactly what we did. I mean, we had Eddie Russell from Wild Turkey. We had Fred Noe from Jim Beam. We had Trey Zola from Jefferson's. We had Greg Davis from Maker's Mark. So, and you know, we had Bobby G, Jim Beam's cocktail guy.
Right.
He was there.
You mentioned Michael Veach before.
Michael Veach,
author, you know,
yeah. Right. Susan Riegler, another mm-hmm. author in Kentucky. Peggy Noe Stevens. And then Carla Carlton, who calls herself the Bourbon Babe.
Yep.
Her new book's going to be out in at the festival for next year.
Oh, great. Okay.
So, yep. And then, you know, we had Linda Ruffinack from the Whiskey Chicks. Pretty much everybody's coming back. And we're going to be adding some new people. But pretty much the lineup, though the topics will change. Some of the people are going to be the same, yeah.
So the idea then, I think, is do we have to do this like the State of the Union address where they got to leave one person up there in case somebody drops a bomb on the building? Because then there goes bourbon, man.
Yeah, maybe so. Because, you know, we're trying to bring in more people from the distillery side. Mm-hmm. While we had a great lineup last year, this for 2018, we're really putting out some big invitations for that one. So.
That's going to be cool. So this time it's at the Meridian Hotel. You're moving. It's at the Meridian, Sugar Mill last year. Is it kind of going to be the same sort of setup where you're doing a Friday and Saturday night grand tasting and then the seminars on Saturday during the day?
So we request by our guests last year was that while we had a lot of seminars, we had them crammed into one day.
Right.
And we did notice while we had a lot of people scheduled to attend the 9 a.m. seminars on Saturday, we probably had less than 20% of the people show up. I actually, on one of them, it was Bourbon Basics. Nobody showed up. And we had about 20 people signed up for that one.
Okay.
So my wife and I sent my mother-in-law, my mom, my sisters, and brother-in-law all into that seminar so she would have someone in there. And my mom and mother-in-law do not drink, you know, except maybe a mimosa here and there with a brunch or something. My mom came out of there at 10:30 hammered. So she's not used to drinking straight bourbon. She was a trooper. She drank it.
She did it. That's good. Learned something probably.
Right, exactly.
You know, I can actually speak to some experience, Tracy, on that level because the first one I went to, I want to say, was maybe 10:30. It was Crowderly's one, you know, sort of the state of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there were a lot of no-shows, and I know that I was almost a no-show. Yeah. It was hard.
it was hard, you know. I didn't even drink that much on Friday night because we were, you know, having to do all the work and putting it all together. And I had a hard time getting up and being out there, you know, Saturday morning. So, you know, we're going to move the start time back to about 10:30 on Saturday. But we're also bringing seminars in on Friday.
Okay.
So we haven't set the start time. We're thinking it's going to be noon, 1 o'clock. We'll have a handful of seminars that'll run through Friday afternoon. We will have a keynote speaker Friday night and Saturday that will be standalone sessions.
Okay.
So if in fact it's one of the big master distillers, longtime master distillers who we're hoping, he'll have a standalone session. So you won't be competing with anyone else. It will be in the grand ballroom of the hotel. And it will be able to accommodate a lot of people.
Okay.
So you won't have to fight for a spot in that. You'll have to register for the spot, but we'll accommodate a lot more people in this situation where we won't have any competing seminars going on.
It's one of the things that I really enjoyed about the festival last year, because obviously we have a lot of good things that go on that are interesting. And not to say that it was completely unique, but having that education component in there, I think, really made a difference and kind of gave it a cut above kind of situation in my perspective of how the event was run. That to me was one of the most, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed the grand tasting. I did enjoy the grand food was great. We'll get to that too, but I enjoyed the educational component because after going to three seminars that day, Crowderly's, I went to Michael Veach's and then Carla Carlton and the other, it was the Women in Bourbon panel, I learned so much in a day. It was great.
Yeah. And when we came up with the concept of the festival, it was not about having this tasting, you know, where everyone just goes and gets drunk drinking bourbon. It was about education because, you know, I'm a bourbon nerd. I'm now a certified bourbon nerd because I passed my Stave and Thief Society. I'm officially an executive bourbon steward now. And, you know, I want people to get to learn more about the spirit they love. And, you know, bourbon is big time.
Right.
You know, and everybody, I mean, you can't buy stuff that you used to be able to buy off the shelf for $29. It's now $70, $80.
Yeah, you know, and that's something in a couple segments, we're going to pull Liam Deegan in here as the proprietor of Barrel Proof, and we're going to have a little roundtable discussion and talk a little bit more about the industry that way, some changes and things like that. You guys had great food, as we discussed at the event last year, so a lot of local restaurants turned up, and it wasn't that there was necessarily meant to be a direct pairing with certain things, but people made food that complemented the bourbons
exactly,
really well.
Yeah. And that's what we're going to do again. When we bring them, a company called My House Social handles getting all of our food for us.
Oh, okay.
We pay them. And unlike a lot of festivals who go and ask for free food, we don't ask for free food.
Mm-hmm.
We have a deal where we pay a certain amount per night for the food because it's taxing for all these restaurants to keep giving away their food.
They get asked
and
a lot.
We know it's an advertising thing for them to advertise their restaurants and the sampling, but we don't want them to just give away everything.
Everybody has a lot of opportunity to advertise that way.
Exactly.
In many instances.
So while we may not cover the full cost of the food, we want to make sure we're contributing. We're not asking them just to come here and do it for free.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't charge them for a booth because that would be against, you know, what pay them and take the money back.
Right,
So, you know, we're asking some of the bigger restaurants to come for next year. But we had a nice showing of restaurants. And,
yeah.
You know, I was in the beginning, I was against the idea of maybe having food trucks. But some of the best food we had was from a couple of the food trucks.
The scene around here for that is excellent.
Yeah, it is. And, you know,
can't go wrong, really.
And I live in Lakeview, so we don't see a lot of the food trucks around there. Mm-hmm. And it's, but man, I was surprised at how good some of the food was.
You know, a nice thing about that too, Tracy, as you know, is that since they, in most instances, don't have a brick and mortar, their food truck is staffed.
Yeah.
They're not pulling staff on a Friday and Saturday night from the restaurant.
Right.
Which, and you're still getting great food. The overhead's lower. All that cost is going to be kept down, and the food's tremendous.
Exactly. And one of the biggest surprises for me when we were told they were coming to serve food was Center Plate. You know, and for me, Center Plate, I ride an Endymion, so I think of dry chicken and unflavored shrimp that they put on our tables at the extravaganza and all that. But man, they did a pork belly over cheese grits, and it was amazing. It might have been the best bite of food in the whole joint.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I don't know if you got to taste it.
I was there on Friday, not on Saturday, and I think the restaurant's changed a little bit.
And that's another thing we do. Yeah. We're having that. We don't, because we have people that have the ability to buy a ticket to get you both nights. We want them to enjoy different restaurants. Some restaurants did both nights.
Okay.
But we are trying to get enough restaurants where they change. And again, we're not taxing the restaurant two nights in a row by taking all their people to come work our day.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. And let's do this, Tracy. We're going to take a little break here, and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about next year's event, some things to look for, what to expect, how it's going to be different. Tell people, of course, where they can go get tickets, which you can now. So we're going to do that. We're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show, everybody. Come on back.
Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Thai Burger Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In 2008, the Louisiana legislature made the Sazerac cocktail the official cocktail of New Orleans, affirming what New Orleanians had known for over 150 years. You just can't beat a good Sazerac. The Sazerac cocktail is the quintessential New Orleans drink, perfect for celebrating the arrival of fall festivals, football season, or just being proud to be a New Orleanian. For the official recipe, visit www.sazerac.com.
This is Christopher Icaza, general manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucouleurs. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's grand dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon dining room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranac's, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you on WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, a few other places. However you're listening to the show, I really appreciate it. As you know, we are here at Barrel Proof, one of my favorite places here in town. So I like to say it's down in the LLG, the lower Garden District on Magazine Street, and the place is run by Liam Deegan and a LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group, our good friends there, Sylvain, Mobar, and Kavin. Thanks to those guys for hosting today, and it's appropriate because Barrel Proof is a very much a whiskey-driven bar. They have lots of other things, but that's their deal. And we're talking about bourbon here today, so it's fitting that we're here at Barrel Proof. Fitting also joined by my current guest, Tracy Napolitano, who is the executive director of what was the inaugural New Orleans Bourbon Festival, now year number two. I was saying this, Tracy, before we went on the air, got to be a good feeling, man, that, you know, you do that first year because you want to say first annual, but you don't want to be presumptuous. And now it's a thing. It's second annual.
Right. So we said inaugural last year, so not to have the annual. Now we're
you don't want to jinx yourself, right?
Now it's the second annual, and we're very happy to be moving on to the second year.
Yeah, that's great, man. And again, I was really impressed with how you guys did things last year. And, you know, one thing we talked quite a bit about last year, but one other thing I wanted to mention to people that was so very enjoyable, and we talked about how it's moved to the Meridian this year, and we'll get to that further, but at Sugarland, the setup was really nice. One of the things too, aside from the seminars, the way the grand tasting itself was structured, I really enjoyed, because you guys didn't oversell tickets, so it was very comfortable, and it actually presented an opportunity to taste and talk to the people who were pouring and interact. So it wasn't just sort of hold your hand out, get a taste, maybe get one or two facts. I had lengthy conversations with numerous people, and that was a great feature.
Well, and that's how we wanted to set it up, where the whole event flowed in a pattern around the room. Mm-hmm. We wanted you to be able to interact, because we had master distillers in the booths.
Right.
You know,
right.
Stephen Beam from Limestone Branch, who is a descendant of J.W. Dant. You know, so we had some pretty cool people just hanging out in their booths. And whether you've been to a distillery or you came to our event and you got to talk to these guys, they're no different than you and I, and they are ready to talk about what they do. And they're friendly as can be, and that's what makes the bourbon industry great. They have, my wife and I started going to Kentucky last year, just knocking on doors. No one knew who we were. We're not in the industry. Like I said, I'm just a bourbon nerd. And I had this idea, so we started knocking on doors. And they were open arms. Come on in, sit down, let's talk about it, let's have a bourbon and figure out how we can help you. And that, it was awesome.
People were very, in that you got, as we were talking about, you got some really great people, luminaries in the business to show up on the production side as well as the historical side and other components, education. And, you know, people, as you said, were very warm, very friendly, very passionate. And it was also a really interesting mix, Tracy, because as we know, we'll talk about this when we bring Liam in about the industry. You know, there's a lot of really big players that own a lot of brands, and they had their different brand people there, which, you know, are still very famous people in many instances.
Yeah.
But then there was also a nice smattering of some of the newer movement of the craft distillers there. And those are some really interesting people to talk to as well.
Yes, the craft guys are great. We only had a handful last year.
Yeah.
But we are expanding the craft segment. So we are bringing in, I know I've spoken with Christina Riggleman from Silverback Distillery out in Virginia. They're coming. They've already committed and signed up to come. Talking to a guy, a group out of Cincinnati. They have claim to have the oldest pot still, working pot still in the country.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That was working before Prohibition. The distillery shut down after Prohibition. Just getting it back up and running. but they're using the old pot still from back then. So, you know, we're going to bring in a lot of new people that weren't here. Part of the problem with craft, too, for with the laws here, if they're not selling here, they've got to get a temporary license to sell. So
right.
That's part of us trying to work within that, the limits of the law, and with these guys to get them where they can actually come and be part of the event. But I want to bring craft in. I think there's some people doing some great things with craft bourbon.
It's a significant, and we'll talk about this when we bring Liam in, it's a significant trend in the industry that represents a growing segment, an important segment as well.
Right.
Well, so Tracy, let's talk a little bit about some of the specifics of 2018. We mentioned that it's moving to the Meridian Hotel and the Contemporary Arts Center is where the Grand Tasting is going to be.
Yes.
And tell people what the dates are.
So we are going to be March 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th for 2018. The 8th, which is Thursday, will be just like we did last year, focused on the distiller dinners. So we'll be bringing in master distillers on Thursday. They will be hosting dinners around the city at some of the nicer restaurants and probably some of the bourbon-themed restaurants. And you'll have an opportunity to buy a ticket to have dinner, sit down with some of these longtime master distillers and be able to listen to all their stories and have them talk about the history of their brand and run you through the tasting of the bourbons that'll be offered. And in some cases, you'll be able to go home with a signed bottle of bourbon from that distillery.
That's cool. And you know, and as we know around here too, with the different restaurant establishments, the different chefs, they get excited because they get to do something different. So they bring their A game to the table.
Exactly.
And they're putting the menu together as well.
Yeah.
Are you guys in the process of still kind of recruiting restaurants to participate in that?
Well, what we're doing this year at the request of the distilleries, while we have a list of restaurants we'd like to see involved, we're going to allow them to pick their restaurants. Last year,
Okay. Because
we put we put this whole thing together in 5-6 months. And so we went to restaurants that we were familiar with and asked them to be involved. Now we're going to have the distilleries work directly with the restaurant on the menus and the bourbon pairing and
Great.
What bourbon we're going to have if we do a bottle to go with, you know.
Great. So they'll be able to work with their distributors and things like that.
Correct.
Correct. That's a good way to do
it.
Everybody knows everybody here. Anyway.
Right, yeah.
It's not that big a thing. So let's talk a little bit about tickets then, Tracy. So the website, tell people what the website is.
It's nobourbonfest.com.
Okay.
And tickets are now available from our VIP ticket down to this year we've added a seminar only ticket.
Oh, okay.
So if you can't make the nighttime tastings, you can do the seminar. You can buy a seminar, unlimited seminar ticket for $99.
Oh,
that
cool.
Includes
okay.
Friday and Saturday seminars. And as you know, Brian, all of our seminars, for the most part, contain bourbon.
They did.
Tastings. So
yes.
You will still get to drink bourbon at on the seminar ticket. You just won't, be able to go into the tasting. You know, we're hoping to have 130 or so different bourbons. We had 83, 86 last year. So this year we're hoping to be up around that 130, 150 in the tasting. But you'll get to enjoy that throughout the seminar series too. So we wanted to make a ticket available in case you can't make the evening. Got family obligations or whatever. You know, now you can go to the seminars on the education side only if you want and still get taste some great bourbon.
Great. And then the Grand Tasting tickets?
The Grand Tasting tickets, we've got both Friday and Saturday night at the Contemporary Arts Center. So we'll be in the Contemporary Arts Center and we're tenting the parking lot.
Oh, okay.
Between the CAC and the World War II Museum. So mm-hmm. We're going to have plenty of space and plenty of room for everyone. We're bringing back Mac Lemler's jazz band.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we want to keep that jazz and speakeasy theme. And man, that venue, the warehouse at the CAC is a great venue for a speakeasy.
That was a good band, by the way, too.
Yeah, they are pretty good.
Really cool. How much are tickets in for the tasting?
So the seminars and if you just want to do the tasting's $109.
Okay.
The seminar's $99.
Okay.
But with the code presale 18, you will get a discount on those tickets.
Okay.
All the way from the regular VIP ticket, the ultimate VIP, we're not discounting because that's our judging ticket, and we only have 30 of those, and most of those are going to be bought again by the people who got them last year.
Sure.
We're expecting it. They've already started to buy them.
Okay.
So, but from the VIP on down, with the VIP tickets, $299.
Okay.
On down, you can get those.
And you get to go to both Grand Tastings.
You get
right?
to go to both Grand Tastings, the seminars. We're adding a VIP welcome party,
Okay. Which
the VIP ticket will get you in that. And if everything works out, that will be a bourbon and burlesque party.
Okay. I like that.
At the hotel, at the Meridian Hotel. And then we're working on a couple of things for some after our events this year. You know, last year we went to focus on having the festival. Now, you know, we've got the festival where we like it, expanding seminars one more day. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to bring in some after our parties.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, what we'll do, Tracy, we're going to take a little break here in just a second. We're going to pull Liam and talk a little bit about the bourbon industry in a broader sense, some industry trends, these sorts of things. I'll certainly have you back on the show, man, when it gets a little closer to the mark.
Sure.
So when some of those details fill in, we'll keep telling people about it.
Okay, perfect.
All right, man. Friends, we're just chatting here with Tracy Napolitano, who's the executive director of New Orleans Bourbon Festival. And go check that out online. Get tickets. They're on sale now. It's going to be a good event next March. And, hey, we're going to take a little break here on the show. We're going to pull Liam Deegan in here at Barrel Proof. We're going to come back and talk more about bourbon. Come on back.
You know the sun never shines in whiskey heaven.
Hey, ladies. Are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello Wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello Wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today. Yeah, we are here at Barrel Proof in the LLG, the lower Garden District, talking about bourbon. And Tracy Napolitano, who's the executive director of the New Orleans Bourbon Festival, is here with us still. And pleased to be joined by my good friend Liam Deegan, proprietor here at Barrel Proof.
Yeah. I was going to say thanks for having me, but I guess thanks for coming here.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for
makes it easier on me.
Thanks for us. That's right. This is actually the first time that we've done a segment here.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. It feels when Tracy got in touch here and he said, you know, hey, we got the stuff going and tickets are on sale for the 2018 Bourbon Festival. Can we talk about it on the show? I said, absolutely. And then I was thinking, hadn't done this here.
Right.
And I'm thinking, like, what better place in New Orleans than Barrel Proof to come talk about the Bourbon Festival, man?
I like it, yeah.
It's like Bourbon Festival every day of the year here.
We try, yeah.
We try. And so, and Liam, what we're going to do after... We do a couple segments here with Tracy, talk a little bit about the industry. If you got time, I'm going to keep you around. We'll talk a little bit more about Barrel Proof in general.
Sure.
So people
of course
know what's going on. We talked quite a bit about the festival with Tracy. And you guys, one of the things, you know, we want to talk about, either one of you both can answer this. Very briefly, let's tell people what is bourbon and what makes it distinct from other forms of whiskey, both domestically as well as internationally.
You want to take it there?
Yeah, well, bourbon has to be in the mash bill. Has to be a minimum of 51% corn. It has to be always put in a new charred oak container and, you know, and aged for a minimum of 2 years. And it can't go in the barrel at more than 125 proof.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be bottled at a minimum of 80 proof.
Right.
To be bourbon.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then what is, how about this one for you then, Liam? What is Kentucky, because people see Kentucky straight bourbon. What does that mean?
So for straight, it has to be... For it to be labeled straight, it has to be over 2 years. And then if it's under four, it has to say for how long. So usually most Kentucky straights will be like 4 year and a day is like the how typically it's usually described. But stuff like Ancient Age is like a 36-month-old bourbon, and they have to say it on the label somewhere. So if it's Kentucky Straight, you can usually, especially these days, it's usually a 4 year and a day, unless they advertise that it's like, you know, there's some 10 years or stuff that's older. But for the most part, which I think we'll probably get into, since there's a shortage in a sense of bourbon, most stuff is going to be the minimum age, which is 4 years, and then they'll put it right in a bottle. Okay. As opposed to like older stuff that's, they had so much of it, they didn't have to put it in the bottle right at 4 years. They let it sit. So that's why, you know, some of that dusty bourbons
is
right. a little more sought after.
Right. That makes sense. Well, so people know too, bourbon is obviously, it's a type of whiskey, but bourbon has to come from Kentucky, correct, Tracy?
No.
Call it bourbon, it does not.
No. Bourbon can come from anywhere in the United States.
Okay. That's the law.
It is a product of the United States, okay. So it has to be made here in the country. But it can be made, I mean, you can make it in New Orleans, you can make it in Washington, you know, making bourbon in New York. I mean, they're making it all over the place.
So then the defining factor then is the 51% corn in the mash bill?
Correct. And the new Chardo container.
And the new Chardo container. Yeah. And so as long as you're meeting those and you're within anywhere in the United States, you can call it bourbon.
And you can't add anything but water to the bourbon. You can't add any flavor or coloring. It has to be just bourbon and water.
Yeah. So if we're comparing it then to their neighbors to the south there in Tennessee, and they'll call it Tennessee whiskey. So what would maybe be something that would be different there?
I mean, really
not a lot.
Nothing marketing. I mean, Jack Daniel's kind of made its money on calling it Tennessee whiskey. Jack Daniel's really is the number one selling bourbon in the world. They just choose to not call it that. They could. And they have like the Lincoln County the filtering, but I mean it's still bourbon. It's basically a marketing thing to differentiate themselves.
And that's charcoal filtering you're talking about, right?
Yeah, like Lincoln County processes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's a bourbon mash bill, but the Lincoln County process is what sets it apart as Tennessee whiskey.
Got it. Yeah. Got it. And so if you are doing then, say, with a bourbon, we know it's got to be 51% corn in the mash bill, then you have some flexibility beyond that in what other grains you use, correct?
Yeah, I mean, you know, because I mean, well, what is it?
Like how much and what you
use. Right, E.H. Taylor just came out with a 4-grain.
Yeah.
You know, the guys that are making LA1, I believe they're putting a little rice in theirs. So, you know, it just, you know, you can use, most of them are using corn, rye, and barley. Mm-hmm. And then some of them are adding grain. Like the guys over at Corsair are doing some amazing stuff using, I mean, they have a 9-grain bourbon, I believe, coming out of Corsair over, you know.
Okay.
So, you can play with it as long as it's 51% corn.
And so that's where we see a lot of the difference. I mean, I know there's different ways in style and things like that as well, but that's a significant part of what makes each one unique.
Yeah, yeah, the corn is probably the most important aspect of bourbon.
Got it. Now, let me ask you guys this too. When we talk about with some of the older stills, single pot copper stills, and then there was the advent in the 19th century, right, of the column still that allowed for continuous distillation and so on and so forth. One part that I've never understood is that when you have different grains cook at different temperatures, right?
Mm-hmm.
So are those separated in the column still? Or how is that controlled so that if they're cooking at different temperatures that something doesn't burn and something gets cooked right?
My understanding is that it's all kind of made into like basically a beer before it's distilled. So all the wash is being put in, and that's all kind of finalized before you go into distillation. So you have kind of like a final soup, if you will.
Okay.
Or like a cereal.
So are those grains are cooked separately then?
Everything's all mashed in together. I guess there's some places that might do different, that might do when they do like a blend, like Contradiction or Wild Turkey Forgiven, like those are two separate distillates.
Okay.
They're being blended, but my understanding is not really blending going on once it hits the still. Like all the blending is either done way before or way after
after it's come
off the scale. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Everything's in the mash. They cook everything in the mash tub.
Okay.
So all the grains are in the mash tub and then transferred into the still.
Okay. Yeah. Because that was something that always kind of confused me, is that the different temperatures at which grains cook, how you avoid that problem. Yeah. But I guess it's just controlled through, doing it as a mash, right?
Yeah. And then everything, if you go to one of the distilleries, everything's controlled.
Right.
So everything in that, they've even got cooling coils inside of the tub, so they control every aspect, so they're not gonna overcook anything.
Gotcha. Well, you guys, let's talk a little bit. So we've talked a lot about certain trends. One of the big trends that's going on in the liquor industry, as we know in general, that's not exclusive to bourbon, wine, beer, everything, is big guys buying small guys. And I think we know, and maybe we just kind of pick it up here, for example, after Prohibition, you know, there were a few that survived Prohibition. We don't have to go down that road. But a lot of consolidation took place then. And then we've had a couple other waves historically with bourbon since then of consolidation. We're kind of seeing maybe a bit of a trend towards that now with people, not necessarily in bourbon, but in whiskey and buying craft producers in the alcohol industry. But contrary to that, what we're seeing with bourbon specifically is we're seeing a lot of growth of the craft distilleries.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's been kind of, people might think, oh, well, that's kind of obvious, but it's really kind of in the growth that it's experienced, it's kind of a new thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, it's kind of similar to what happened, you know, 10, 20 years ago with beer. People are starting to get into it, and then certain people are doing well, certain people are not doing so well, certain people are making good stuff, certain people are making not so good stuff. So right, I think it'll be interesting to see how like the craft distilleries progress as either they get bigger or they get bought by brands. Some of these brands might buy them just to shut them down, just to kill competition, which is what they did in the 70s, 80s.
Yep.
with a lot of brands. There's a lot of really good American craft distilleries out there. There's a lot of really bad ones, but
right,
you know, I think over time the good stuff will come out.
Yeah, I think. And is it true, you guys, where the craft distilleries, we'll keep it to bourbon here, it represents a pretty small slice of the pie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, now in, like, say, for example, the wine industry, it's gone that way, but not too, too long ago in the wine industry, the representation of the small independent winery was a much larger slice of that pie.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking a pretty small percentage here, aren't we, Tracy?
Well, yeah, because, you talk about it. This question was posed to me the other day. How many bourbon distilleries are there? Well, the answer is 10.
Right.
There's 10 distilleries. But then there's all these craft distillers, but they're not all surviving. So there's 10, and then the 10 that are surviving, the 10 big guys, they start buying up the good ones. I mean, it happens all the time. And then you had, you know, when bourbon took it, you know, was failing in the 80s, some of the companies got rid of their distilleries, mm-hmm. sold them off to other people. Now they're coming back and buying up distilleries that have, you know, popped up and are doing a great job. So... yeah, but you know, the craft movement, it's gonna be big, and it's gonna continue to get big.
Well,
yeah.
And thanks for that. Let's do this, you guys. Let's take a break because I want to come back to something else related to that, talking a little bit about contract whiskey and rectifying what that means, because that's also a big part of the industry, but it's a changing landscape there as well. Friends, we're gonna take a little break here on the Nola Drink Show. We're here at Barrel Proof, we're talking about bourbon. Come on back.
To shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Night before last, I got loaded.
Tim McNally, welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you on WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and podcast land, wherever you are. Yes, we are at Barrel Proof, and we're talking about bourbon with Tracy Napolitano of the New Orleans Bourbon Festival and Liam Deegan of said Barrel Proof. Thanks for being here, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're talking a little bit about some of the trends, you guys, in the industry here a little bit. We talked about the uptick in craft distillers and, to a degree, some of the challenges that they may be facing. Just so people know, let me start here, and then we'll get back to one of the things I said I wanted to talk about. Is it was pretty common, or a common model in the liquor business in general, is somebody is making something for you. So, like, they're doing it at their distillery because they have the production capability, and you're maybe having them make it to spec or something, and you're putting your label on it. This is really common in beer. This is really common in wine, and it's also very common in the spirits. But kind of what's going on now is we're seeing with the supply of bourbon, since that's mostly what we're talking about here, being tight. The hand, as you said, Tracy, there are 10 distilleries. They're starting to kind of clamp down because the availability of so-called contract whiskey or bulk whiskey, we could call it, is it's tightening. It's harder to get. So people aren't doing it anymore or as much, right?
Well, no, I mean, there are still people doing it, but it's getting harder and harder.
More expensive to
get,
buy, yeah.
Get the bourbon because they're just not letting it go. And like MGP now has their own brand, George Remus. So this is the first time they've put their own bourbon in a bottle to sell. And so now that's out. I don't think we're seeing that here in New Orleans yet, the Remus, but it'll be here soon.
Okay.
But, you know, Heaven Hill used to make bourbon for people, and they still may make some, but not much, because all their bourbon's becoming, you know, they need it for themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's sort of so obviously supply and demand, right? So either people are going to get shut out, or the cost, you got to be willing to pay a pretty penny, and that becomes just not effective, I'm supposing, on a business model level.
Right. Or some people just aren't selling their whiskey anymore. They used to because they had a bunch, but now it's the big guys who are doing all this distilling. They want it for themselves because the demand's so high.
Now, with that, where are we seeing demand right now? And I know that, you know, one of the challenges of the bourbon industry in the past few decades has been misjudging demand, I think, actually, given certain circumstances. World War II is certainly an example of this, you know. People being caught with their pants up or down, I'll put it that way, at different times. And lately, I know that because you have to plant, like we're talking about, an aged product, so being able to project 4, 8, 12 years out is pretty difficult. But where are we seeing things going right now? And is there an adjustment in supply being made? Are people a little skittish because of the history to not oversupply?
No, I think they're laying a lot of bourbon in the wood right now. But again, it's an aged product, so we're going to have to wait for it to come to maturity and get in the bottle. But, you know, they obviously did not see this bourbon boom coming.
Oh yeah.
Because
right.
There's not enough bourbon, you know, and everyone's out there hunting for the, you know, elusive bottle that they are, you know, right now, I believe it's the Al Young Four Roses bottle everyone wants.
Okay.
Celebrating Al Young's 50 years with Four Roses. Well, it's not even in this market. Well, I believe it's here, but it's not for sale yet.
Okay.
But so everyone's hunting this, and they only have so much of it to go around. So that's what we're up against right now. There's just not enough bourbon. And there will be down the road. Like, you know, they could never with Pappy Van Winkle. No idea there how much Pappy they were going to need 23, 25 years ago.
Right. That's tough to predict.
Right.
Right.
So they just don't have enough. And it's going to be a while before you see, if ever, that there's going to be enough of it to go around. You know?
Right. Well, and Liam, do you sense maybe that there's a little bit that people are kind of skittish? Because that's been a sort of a boom and bust thing with the bourbon industry.
I mean, I don't, like, the distilleries, I don't think they're being too skittish. I know, but Buffalo Trace has already added a new warehouse.
Okay.
I know they just bought a ton of land for either the wood or building out other warehouses for aging whiskey. Heaven Hill increased their production by like a lot, like a major percentage. I'm not sure the exact number. But they're ready to. I mean, I think we're already over the hump of the shortage. I think pretty soon in the next year or two, we'll start seeing product that was put in wood as soon as people realize that they're falling short on product.
Okay.
And I don't think the demand's not going away anytime soon. People love whiskey. I think the only thing that happened was, you know, vodka became popular in the 70s, and later, like, you know, Canadian style whiskeys became popular, and that kind of killed the bourbon market. Yep. That was so long ago, and I think that trend, the pendulum's not swinging back on that. I think people are still just love whiskey so much that it's gonna remain like one of the bigger selling products out there. I mean, the vodka drinkers are gonna stay vodka drinkers, but I don't think the bourbon drinkers are gonna go back to drinking, you know, the clear spirits. And,
right.
And there's more and more bourbon drinkers being born every day. So
see, and that's kind of the difference, right? Because we do have a lot more going on in the distillate world of, you know, growth in tequila.
Yeah.
And, you know, specialized spirits, mezcal, things like that we see that are, I mean, that's a drop in the bucket compared to what we're talking to with whiskey, of course. But it's actually more people, the bourbon drinker numbers are growing as opposed to a same size pie.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could relate it to like anything in sort of food or any other spirits where people are kind of like really caring about where it's coming from, who's making it, whatnot. And people who are a little geeking out over this kind of stuff are going to find their way to bourbon pretty easily. Rather than just like being sticking with vodka because it tastes good with fruit juice, you know, I think people who are attracted to, you know, nicer food, nicer drinks are going to find bourbon no matter what.
Well, and you guys, and Tracy, you can probably speak to this pretty well. I think certainly the online world, I think bourbon's a really good example of the online world really changing a lot of things as far as people being able to find bottles, exchange information. All that was. Would you say that's fair?
Oh yeah, it's fair. I mean, right before I got here, I got a list from someone saying, "Hey, here's a list of stuff I'm willing to trade. And okay. Is there anything in here you want?" And I'm like, "Well, of course there are things." I mean, he sent me about, I guess it was 50 different bottles, and there was three in there that I wanted because I don't have them. The rest of them I had all of them. I mean, I have 600 bottles at home, and I trade all the time. So I'm constantly, you know, someone says, "Hey, you're looking for this?" Oh, I am looking for it. And then they're going to want to pick through what I have because I've backstocked a lot of stuff.
So when you do that, Tracy, when you collect like that, do you try and pick up multiple bottles of the same thing so you have a reserve from which to trade?
My standard is, especially if it's a hard to get, you know, limited release something, I always try to get at least two.
Okay.
So I want to drink one and I want to save one. You know, one that everybody keeps trying to get from me is the Booker Rye because I managed to get two of them. And I've got about a half a bottle left of one and I have one that's still in the box. So I don't know that I'm going to let that one go. First off, it was very, very good.
I was going to say, and I see that you didn't bring it with you today.
I did not bring it with me today.
Well, because we are talking about liquor, you can't technically turn around and sell it to somebody else, I guess. But back in the day when I used to collect baseball cards, you had a baseball card price guide.
Yeah.
So you'd flip through and you'd say the Pete Rose rookie card was worth this amount of money, and that's how you tried to negotiate with your buddies to trade cards. Is it kind of like, what is a hole in my collection? Is there some sort of guidance out there for bourbon collectors to say, yeah, this maybe is kind of worth this, so I'll give you two of these for one of those?
Well, I think the secondary market's driving the prices really high.
Okay.
So it's got to be fair, you know, and I do not trade at secondary market prices. I won't do it. I won't pay a secondary price. Now, I have paid... But I paid secondary prices at local retail, unfortunately.
Okay.
But I won't trade you. If you come to me and say, like somebody sent me a thing, say they had a Lot B Van Winkle, and they wanted $800 for it. Well, you know what? That's ridiculous. I'm not going to, I mean, I know what I paid for my bottle, mm-hmm. and I won't pay a penny more than what I paid for it. And he didn't want to trade. He wanted cash. I'm like, that's just not going to happen.
Well, and I suppose you can get online, right, and you can see on different publications that are out there that say what MSRP is on a bottle, right?
So yeah, you can get the MSRP. I generally go to the auction sites
and
see what they're selling at auction for. Okay. Because a lot of time the auction prices can be fair. Now, when you're talking Pabbi Van Winkle, the prices are never fair.
And so it's a luxury good, and there's a mysticism kind of thing, Liam, going on with Pabbi?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the name. Is what makes it so expensive.
Yeah.
I think, it is good whiskey, but there's, as I think with any, you know, commodity, there's opportunists that see that they could sell a bottle of Lot B for $800, and there probably are several people that would pay that much. They're probably not the smartest whiskey buyers.
Right, exactly.
But I mean, there's right now there's a lot of money in the secondary market, even though it's, you know, a gray area legally.
Yeah. Right.
But there's a lot of good deals to be had out there. There's a lot of cool bourbon to get. So it's, while it's not the most legal way of getting alcohol.
Right, right.
There's some cool stuff out there. And it's actually, those groups are pretty well policed by the people in them themselves. There has been some people selling fake bottles and whatnot, but those people are found out pretty easily, because the people that are trading in these markets are super, super educated on whiskey, and they're going to find the fakes, and then those people are blacklisted from those communities.
Can we take a break here? Yeah. Do you want to stick around, Tracy?
Yeah, no,
you
guys,
we'll do one more segment. We'll talk about that stuff. Friends, we're talking bourbon industry here at Barrel Proof. Come on back.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event, or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today. Yes, we are here at Barrel Proof in the lower Garden District. It's a working bar, and now we're open, so people are starting to come, which is a cool thing. Got some tunes rolling in the background here. We're talking here with Tracy Napolitano of New Orleans Bourbon Festival, Liam Deegan here, proprietor at Barrel Proof. And you guys, when we went to the break just before, we were talking about the gray market, the secondary market, some things. You know, the internet is a dangerous place, but there you go. We'll leave that at that. But we're talking, like many things, you may have heard of these stories from the wine industry, which are somewhat common these days, unfortunately. A lot of counterfeit stuff, a lot of fraud in the bourbon world, in the whiskey world as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a secondary market, so there's your opportunity for people to sell. I mean, they're selling you bourbon, but it's not what's in the bottle, because you can go on eBay and buy Pabbi Van Winkle bottles. That's just created an opportunity for someone to sell you something that's not Pabbi Van Winkle. And, you know, you've got to be very cautious. As I was saying when we went to break, there are guys that know exactly where the fill line should be on the bottle, the date. They know how to search the laser codes and all the date codes, so they know, you know, if something's not real.
If something's not, yeah, right. Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, Liam, because I know one of the things that I find fascinating, we talk about fraud in the wine business, is that people are selling, in many cases, these wines that are decades old.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability of someone who is either a collector, or for that matter, a real, you know, major professional with a lot of experience, a lot of people have never tasted these wines before. So being able to tell when something's actually not real is pretty tough, isn't it? I'm assuming in bourbon, that's got to be a tough thing too.
Yeah, I think like one of the things that people look for in frauds, aside from, like, you know, in the pictures, the labels, the fill line, the type of glass that was used. I mean, when they taste it, a lot of people who drink a lot of bourbon can tell the yeast strains of you know, like Beam has a very specific taste. All the other distillers, usually the biggest thing is the yeast flavor that you get from the bourbon. So a lot of people can pick that out. But what these counterfeiters are doing is using the correct distillery. They're just not using the right juice. So they're not refilling it with, you know, just early times or whatever, or, you know, iced tea. They're actually going through a little bit of work. So I guess you got to hand it to them there. They're putting in the work.
They're putting in the work.
at least a little bit, you know, to try and dupe some people. But, you know, a lot of people that I've talked to, like, they, I mean, you know, like John Sinclair, I mean, he can pick out the distillery just by the yeast profile of it. So if he got a bad bottle, he can pretty much tell. But if there's people who are buying, you know, a Van Winkle for $1,000 as like a gift item, who don't really know bourbons, because it's getting in that like Johnny Walker Blue Label type of arena,
right.
Where people are kind of just buying these things as gifts,
right?
Then it could be pretty easy to fool someone.
Well, and I'm guessing too, like you said, you might know the distillery, but if you think you're buying a, you know, aged bottle 25 years, and then someone's right. actually selling you one that's 15,
yeah,
right, that might be kind of tough too, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's tough. And then I guess that that's the game you play, you know. If you come out with a 15-year-old bourbon, I guess that's not so bad at the end of the day. But
right. The internet is a dangerous
place. Yeah, you're not really getting what you pay for. Though.
So be cautious.
Be cautious.
Buying off from somebody you don't know.
Yeah, right.
You
know, there's a reason why there's regulations in the alcohol right. business.
Yes. That makes a lot of sense. So that's one of those things where yes, you know, regulation can be good.
Yeah.
so you guys were talking also a little bit too. We touched on this. Rectifiers, and then we talk about the term people might want to know. What is bottled? And go ahead, Tracy, you answer this one. What does bottled in bond mean?
So bottled in bond is a four-year-old bourbon that is bottled in bond is something that they did to protect the bourbon consumers against rectifiers who are buying a barrel, putting stuff like turpentine, tobacco spit, anything they could to stretch that bourbon.
Now, I do think that some of the rectifiers that were trying to make a good product might disagree with the protect part. Right, right.
Some. But so the idea is that it comes from one distillery, one distillate cycle, and it's stored in a bonded warehouse that the government had a key, and they kept an eye on that warehouse so nothing could go wrong, and that bourbon was under lock and key.
And bottled there... In that
distillery, so and it was made sure that bourbon was exactly what you thought it was supposed to be when you get it, you know?
Right.
So it was done to protect the consumer,
mm-hmm.
and then you know, and to some extent the distilleries too, because there are people out there taking their product and really making people sick with some pretty bad whiskey.
Yeah, going back some decades and some things like that. And I think when we find, because one of the reasons why I want to draw this comparison is that in the wine business, this is also very common where people go out and buy bulk wine or do custom crush, and I won't bore you with what the distinction is with those terms. But there are people that make really good wines that way. And I do know, I mean, there are certain whiskeys that are made by people, private label stuff, if that's what we want to call it, rectifying, if that's what we're calling it, that are actually pretty good, right? I mean,
I think there's a bad stigma with sourced whiskey. A lot of it is because the way it was marketed and the way it was priced was some companies were fooling consumers. Some were being pretty open about it. I think High West has always done a pretty good job of being relatively transparent where they can be. I think there's certain contracts that can't say exactly where they're getting certain things from, but they're kind of putting it out there, mm-hmm. of where they're getting stuff from. They're not saying like, oh, it's this old recipe that we found. Like in a train station from like Wyatt Earp or
floating down the Mississippi River,
yeah, right. and then charging twice as much as the actual distiller charges for the same juice, just putting it in a cooler bottle. There are a lot of places or companies that do that, but you know, source whiskey it's still made by good distilleries. It's still good juice, and sometimes it's either not exactly to their house profile, like something that Four Roses does, since they only do really three different styles. If it doesn't fit their profile, they'll sell it. I mean, there's no reason not to sell it if they made it and they paid to have it be made. So some companies are buying really good whiskey and just selling it on their own brand, especially to make money, in addition to like selling maybe vodkas and gins to get their actual bourbon stock up to age. And then there's other companies that just are selling some junk that just has a really nice backstory to it.
Yeah.
So there's two different sides to that coin. I think there's a lot of great source whiskey out there. Just because it's sourced doesn't mean you shouldn't buy it, you shouldn't drink it, or you should turn your nose up at it. But I think you have to be a little bit aware of what's going on behind the curtain.
So this is where the internet maybe isn't a dangerous place to some degree and can be your friend, right? I mean, yeah. This is something if you're getting it. This is, thank you for bringing this up. This is sort of where I wanted to go. If you're a consumer, it's a big world of bourbon out there.
Yeah.
How it's made, by whom, from whom. So on and so forth, how you avail yourself of the knowledge to make sure that you end up with something that you want.
Right. I mean, you can look at a company like Diageo in the Bulleit brand. Bulleit's been made by other people for them for a while.
Yep.
And it's gotten so popular, they have now built their own distillery in Kentucky. So they will have their own juice. If not, they may have it. It may be their own juice coming out now. But, you know, they've gotten so big using other people's recipe that now they have their own distillery.
Bullet's going to be a story for another time, because they've managed to step in something pretty good lately that yes. We're going to talk about on the show at a future date. But yeah, so it doesn't mean that it's a bad thing. Need to read up, talk to other bourbon right. enthusiasts, come to a place like Barrel Proof where you guys know your stuff.
Yeah, I mean, for example, our menu was made like right at the time when Source Whiskey was a really controversial subject. So mm-hmm. our menu is formatted with, it's all by distillery, and then the non-distilling producers are listed, and that's kind of, we kind of leave it up to you to decide if the non-distilling producers are good or not, or if it's worth the extra amount of money that you're paying, or if it's worth it to pay a little less for one of those products.
Right.
So, I mean, it's like anything. It doesn't take a whole lot of research for most things. Some of the stuff you really have to go deep into the internet to find out who's making what. But
not the dark web.
Yeah. <Right. laughs> No bitcoins.
No bitcoins.
But I mean, like anything, it helps to be like to educate yourself a little bit. I mean, it's something you're putting in your body. You might as well do a little research on it.
You're spending some money on it. Yeah, it's course, a hobby and an interest at that point, right? If you're going that far, it's a hobby.
Yeah. And if you don't feel like doing the research, just ask the bartender, and they usually will know. At least give you a little bit of backstory.
Yeah,
that's why places like Barrel Proof are perfect for someone getting into bourbon.
Yeah,
because you can come here and try, just spend a few dollars and try a lot of different bourbons before you go over to the store and just start dumping cash, and then you get something home and you're like, I don't like this.
Right.
Then you're trying to giving it away or making just making cocktails with it, and you may have spent $70, $80, $100 for a bottle.
Right. Yeah. Right. You guys. Okay. Well, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna take a little break. I'm gonna come back with Liam. Tracy, thanks for being here, man. Tell people real quick again what is the Bourbon Festival website again?
NOBourbonFest.com.
Okay.
And you can get tickets with presale 18 is the code to get a discounted ticket.
Awesome. Presale 18. We'll have Tracy back on Friends on the show in the very near future. Talk more details about the event. Tracy, thanks for being here, man.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. Friends, we're going to take a little break here. We're going to be back with one more segment with Liam Deegan here at Barrel Proof. Come on back.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac Rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, General Manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucouleurs. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay. An ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful, fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. A crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
The French Market offers daily entertainment and delicious food and drink options throughout our 6-block district. Whether you crave raw oysters or fresh produce, authentic confections, or healthy daiquiris, you can find it here. Sit at one of our cafes and hear live local music. Enjoy a muffaletta, po' boy, salad, or cheese plate in the farmer's market. Check out our pop-up farmer's markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays for even more fresh food options. History is being made fresh daily at the French Market. Visit frenchmarket.org for food, drink, retail, and event listings.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter.
Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. We're here at Barrel Proof in the lower Garden District, chatting now with Liam Deegan, who is the proprietor here at Barrel Proof at 1201 Magazine Street, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes, yes. That's funny. Funny how I know that off the top of my head. I wonder why. But really cool bar. How many? And Liam, we've had you on the show before here and there. But how long have you guys been open now? Are we close to 3 years?
We're a little over 3 years. We had a 3 year anniversary in May.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So 3 years, that, 3 months. I guess that's 4 months.
Yeah.
Time goes.
Time
gets a little blurry as time goes on,
right, right. Well, and we were just talking about bourbon, so there was one thing that you mentioned coming up, and we'll put this back on the radar closer to the mark, but in November, you guys are going to host a really cool fundraiser.
Yeah, November 4th, we're doing a big fundraiser with some big-time bourbon collectors and some guys who buy a lot of single barrels. It's part of a big group that does barrel picks and part of like the kind of secondary market. A lot of guys that are big in that, you know, dusty bourbon world, they have a fundraising, a charitable group. They've done a few big events around the country. And the next one is going to be here in November. We're basically going to be selling a couple different tiers of tickets, and they're going to be pouring some really, really cool stuff that you probably won't even see anywhere in your lifetime. Like they're opening some really crazy bottles of some antique stuff.
Wow.
It's really hard to find stuff, some single barrel picks that are nearly impossible to get your hands on. So it's definitely going to be worth it to come check out. And we'll talk about it when we have more details. But November 4th is a day to put on your calendar.
So,
there's going to be some once in a lifetime bottles.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. So it'll be like an entry fee kind of thing. And then,
yeah, entry fee. And you're going to, I think it's basically going to be like you buy a ticket, you get a certain amount of pours of some bottles. There's also going to be like a VIP. Ticket available for some extra special bottles, and they're also going to bring some of these guys are big cordials collectors. Oh. We're going to have a special guest mixing up some cocktails with some, you know, like antique chartreuse, antique cherry herring, Benedictine, and making some mostly whiskey based cocktails, I think, like, you know, just classic stuff with this like era correct antique cordials. It's going to be a pretty cool event.
Oh, that'll be really neat.
Yeah.
So that's full on cocktail hero then.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff going on.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. So November 4th, Friends Circle, the date. Of course, we'll talk about that a little bit closer to the mark. We've been talking about this, Liam, in recent weeks, and I've got a whole bunch of interviews that I taped during Tales of the Cocktail, and I'm still rolling a bunch of those out, as you know. How was Tales for you, man?
It was a lot of fun. Not a lot of sleep, but it was... It was a great week here at Barrel Proof. We had a lot of our friends we don't see too often throughout the year come in from out of town. We had a crazy end of week party on Saturday. We were open a little past our normal last call time. the sun was starting to come. Or the sun was up when we left, it was a fun night. A lot of the people who had won at the Spirited Awards came in, kind of had an after party, drank us out of almost all of our beer and tequila. It was a good time. We turned the music up a little louder than normal.
Than normal. That's always the trend.
It was a lot of fun. Tails is great. It's always fun to see all the people from out of town come in, and you know, especially here, people usually come in after events or when they're done for the day and kind of just hang out, drink beers, you know, maybe some old fashions, and nothing too crazy. You don't get too cocktail crazy here, especially during Tails. We kind of just have it as a place to escape, hang out with your friends, drink some beers and relax.
Yeah. Well, and that's always been the vibe here.
Oh, yeah.
Since
yeah.
you opened, and it's, you know, kind of neighborhoody, if you will. But I think you guys are getting a lot more recognition, since you first opened. So are you starting to see more people that I know this for a fact, because I tell people to go here, and people, I used to say, hey, you need to go check out this place if you like whiskey. And people go, yeah, I've already been there. And it, so, I mean, you're getting people that are coming to pay you a visit, I think, from out of town a lot more often than you used to, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's just what's really cool about being open for, you know, now it's been longer than 3 years. So we've always had a really great local customer base, which helps in the slower seasons and whatnot. And it's nice to have your regulars and familiar faces. But we also, as time goes on and there's a little bit more press out there, we start to see people coming in. And those are mostly the people who are trying the whiskeys and doing flights and trying little, you know, the smaller pours. People are coming specifically here to drink whiskey. You know, it's not always an accident that people roll in here, because it's an unassuming front of the bar,
right?
But we're getting some people who have heard of us through friends or through, you know, other press or certain podcasts.
Well, thanks, not mine.
But yeah, but yeah, it's been really awesome when people come in from other cities or even other countries that come in to, like, you know, just see what we're all about, have some whiskey, some beer, maybe do a couple shots with us.
That I like to do that. I've done that once or twice. I heard that
once or twice.
Here. Yeah. Once or twice. Well, and that's, we've talked about this before, but you know, the general emphasis here is on whiskey. How many whiskey? Where are you guys at roughly number wise? I know it fluctuates. But.
We have about 294, I would say.
Wow. Okay.
Although one of our newest guys just broke a full bottle of Lefroig 10, so it's at 293 currently. the entire shelf of Lefroigs came off on his face on Sunday, I think, or Monday.
Oh, and only only one bottle.
Of all the bottles, it was the cheapest one that broke. Luckily, I think the Lefroig 25 fell on right on his face, which stopped the stopped the fall.
That was a sacrifice. Luckily, you're willing to make, yeah, right? his face for the 25.
Yeah, of course. If any bottle is going to break, I'm happy. The 10 years. Is good to go.
Yeah, right. Good one. Oh, and you mentioned Lefroig. So obviously a big selection of whiskeys here. We were talking about bourbon quite a bit on the show, but you guys have a representation of the broader world of whiskey.
Yeah, our, you know, kind of bread and butter, as it were, is bourbon. And the next biggest category would be scotch. And we have all the regions, and it's all the menus organized by region. We have a fair amount of Islay stuff, which is what we all kind of lean towards, like the big powerful ones. Mm-hmm. Then we have, you know, a fair amount of rye, smaller amounts of like American single malt, small American producers that, you know, craft or sourced whiskey. Then we have a little bit of rum.
Do you guys have some Japanese stuff here too?
Yeah. That's the, I guess, the hidden gem of the bar.
Okay.
When we first opened, we had everything we could get. As it became more popular in the last, you know, we opened just 3 years ago, and we could get a lot at that point. Within a year or two, it got a lot of press. It won some awards. You know, Japanese whiskey as a whole was there's a lot of buzz around it. All of a sudden, we could only get maybe four bottles total of all the stuff that we could get in state. Now it's back up a little bit. I think we have around 12 bottles now. There's been a couple new bottlings coming out. A new distillery is now in Louisiana. So the Japanese whiskey shelf is looking a little bit more healthy than it was a year ago. It was getting kind of sad, but now
thankfully,
yeah, now thankfully we have a better stock of Japanese whiskey, because it was crazy how it got so popular so quick that we couldn't keep up with the demand.
That's always, you know, we talked about this a little bit with the bourbon. You know, when you're dealing, this works with wine too, is that you have to try and predict where something's going to be a ways down the road.
Oh, yeah.
and you're working with a, you know, it's a produced product. It's an agricultural product in a lot of ways. So that prognostication game is really, really hard. And when something becomes, when it's a small piece of the pie,
right,
and it becomes the new darling, even if that pie, yeah, doubles, it's huge, the impact.
Well, yeah, I think anyone could tell you in the bourbon world, they never saw this boom coming.
No, not
and
at all.
And now I think they've made their adjustments. And now I think they're set up for, at least the bigger guys are set up for a very long time. They're counting on bourbon to remain big. They're just all about growth. The Japanese stuff that happened, so it was like a mini bourbon boom. It got so popular so fast, and it was flying off the shelves. You know, you couldn't really get it. The bigger markets had some, but Louisiana doesn't really have that big of a market share for some of the more expensive higher end marks. So it disappeared from Louisiana so fast. And now we got some back. Now the Suntory Toki is out that I brought in. I think on the last podcast.
Very enjoyable. Yeah.
Now they kind of they've introduced some non age stated bottling, some stuff to kind of meet demand in the middle. So now luckily I think we're also getting over the hump of that shortage. But
well, Liam, do me a favor, man, because we actually got to cut it. Tell people where they can find you online, come see in person, and taste some Japanese whiskey as well as many others.
So online, it's bowerproofnola.com. Instagram and Twitter, it's also bowerproofnola, same as Facebook. And in real life, you can find us at 1201 Magazine. In the Lower Garden District, right across from French Tuck Coffee and Courtyard Brewery.
You guys open at 4 o'clock every day, right?
4 o'clock every day. Depends what's going on and what time we close. But
Right. I never asked that question. Open up at 4 o'clock every day.
Yeah, we'll be open at 4 every day. And, that's about
cool.
It.
Thanks, buddy, for hosting us. I appreciate it.
Of course.
Friends, hey, come on back to the NOLA Drink Show.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bageau heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning into the show today, whether you're listening here on the radio in New Orleans or podcast in New Orleans or podcast wherever you may be on the planet. I always appreciate you tuning in to the show wherever you may be. So thank you very much. Hey, tell a friend, we have a show. We do a show that explores the world of drink and food in New Orleans and beyond. Yes, we do. So, I hope you found that very interesting, our conversations there with Tracy and Liam about bourbon. Obviously a huge topic. It's a great event. Go check it out. You can get your tickets now. The discount code that Tracy mentioned also gets you a little bit of a cheaper price. You can do just the seminars, as we talked about. You can also do just the grand tasting. You can go to both grand tastings. There's the VIP package, all that good stuff. So, yeah, it's really a lot of fun, friends, that event. And I encourage you to check it out if you like bourbon. And one of the things that we noted, too, also that I want to highlight is that they're kind of expanding some of the other offerings for beverages. So if you have a spouse or something that's not quite as much into bourbon, or maybe you yourself not quite so much into bourbon, but somebody you want to bring is that kind of thing, who knows? There'll be some more things to drink there, probably a few more cocktails, and it sounds like some wine and that sort of thing too. So everybody's happy. Food's great, music's great, all that stuff. We talked about the Red Dress Run, friends. Go check that out. This Saturday, there's still a chance that you can register if you go to the racetrack at the fairgrounds this evening or tomorrow, as we talked about, but also going on in the French Quarter.
on Saturday is Dirty Linen Night. It is the 16th annual Dirty Linen Night, and it takes place on Royal Street, kind of an answer to White Linen Night, which was supposed to happen. I think it was pretty much a wash out there, White Linen Night there on Julia Street in the CBD. And down in the quarter, what goes on traditionally the week after is Dirty Linen Night. And it was started 16 years ago by some of the artists who actually eventually became involved with Dutch Alley Artist Co-op, which is right there at Dutch Alley and the French Market where Domain and Decatur meet. And that is a gallery that my wife used to be in way back when. And I'll mention Dirty Linen Night as well is several years ago, earlier in the history of the event. I'll put it that way. She and I got engaged on Dirty Linen Night there in the French Quarter. So always a special event for Sylvia, my lovely wife, and I. But that goes on. Yeah, starts, I think, at about 6 o'clock. It's kind of 6 o'clock, goes till about 9 o'clock. And it starts at the 200 block of Royal, which is Iberville, and goes down to about the 1,000 block of Royal, which is St. Philip or so there. And there's about 30 galleries. Basically, it's kind of the idea is to get you into the art galleries and check it out. And a lot of them will, kind of traditionally, they say people will serve dirty rice and dirty martinis, but a lot of them have wine, things like that. There's music, some music in the streets, and occasionally they have like street performers like mimes and things like that. And you just kind of roll around, you go check out the different galleries and shops, and go check it out. Some probably have some sales going on, things like that. The idea, of course, dirty linen, so white linen. You're supposed to wear white linen last week, which never turns out well in the rain. But then dirty linen, you know, you wear an off-white, you know, brown linen, that kind of thing. And that's all. That's all you really got to do. And it's free. So, you know, you wander around, you don't need to pay for drinks here and there and stuff like that. But again, it's kind of an open house in the gallery. So a lot of the stuff is complimentary. And it's a really nice event. So it's a good chance to go see some of our neighbors. It's kind of low key, which is fun. And go check out some of the cool galleries there on Royal Street. So again, that is Saturday from 6 to 9. You can start really anywhere you want, but it goes between the 200 block to the 1,000 block of Royal, and a lot of fun. So you can do that. One of the things I always like to note, too, is that, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Red Dress Run now that it's at Crescent Park, and I think it'll dip into the lower part of the quarter, the bottom of the quarter there, and finish up where the party is, you know, back at Crescent Park. It used to be, as we talked about, at Armstrong Park, so it started there, did wend its way more through the heart of the quarter, and then end up back at Armstrong Park for the party, and people get hammered, you know. It's a fun event, don't get me wrong, and drink a lot of beer, but the transition of going from the Red Dress Run to Dirty Linen Night is always one of the more interesting things to watch in New Orleans, I think. So there you go. Watch for people in red dresses that are asleep on the sidewalk when you have your dirty linen shirt on, that kind of thing. Or, you know, hey, just bring a dirty linen shirt and pair of pants or dress or something like that and change out of your red dress and then hop right into the next thing. You can do that. Friends, a little bit of news here from the champagne world. And bear with me on this. So the idea in Champagne is that they set the Syndicate General des Vignerons and the Union des Maisons de Champagne, they always set what the yield can be for champagne, meaning how many kilograms per hectare you can actually use, or how much can actually be harvested to make champagne. Now, there is always a reserve that is held, and that's from previous vintage. It's basically just still wine in tanks sitting there waiting to be used, and the idea is that is to augment in case of a bad harvest, and then that's also used when you're doing to non-vintage, you know, named year vintages of champagne. It adds some complexity and kind of creates some consistency and things like that. So that's somewhat of what the reserve is used. So last year in 2016, the total marketable yield that was allowed was 10,800 kilograms per hectare. The exact same number is going to be the case for this year. And I'll get into that in a second. But unlike last year, the reserve, what you could use from the reserve that I just described was 1,100 kilograms per hectare. This year, it is only 500. But it still totals 10,800, right? So obviously what people are able to pick is a little bit more, that difference of about 600 kilograms per hectare difference that you're allowed to increase. Now, or pick more. Last year was kind of a bad harvest, a lot of frost, problems with that. The yields were generally down, that sort of thing. This year, it's looking quite a bit better. It's going to be an early harvest, it looks like. One of the earliest, really, on record, August is kind of what we're talking about. We've had quite a few of those lately, 2003, 2007, 2011, and 2013. But they're generally pretty optimistic about the yields. Now, what happened last year, you know, demand continues to go up. I think it rose, where are we at? That rose 2.9% in the first half of this year. This This is according to an article in the drinks business, by the way. And with the export volumes rose by more than 9%. This is mostly sales outside of Europe, which actually grew a whopping 17.9%. But last year when things were kind of down and they did the 2,800 kilograms per hectare, the demand was up last year in 2016, but wasn't quite as much as maybe people thought it was going to be. So certain places like Asia and stuff like that, the growth wasn't quite there. U.S. didn't grow as much as they thought it was going to. So what they're doing by keeping it basically level to last year, better yield, okay, but the same amount and then more growth, is to kind of create a little bit more demand, right? Tighten up demand there a little bit. And they're still going to have enough of a volume to meet the demand. We're not talking about it. Don't worry. But it's also to make sure that there wasn't an oversupply, which last year there was a bit of an oversupply, basically, that happened. And this is always part of the game, is it's trying to prognosticate and get all of this right. So again, they're keeping it at about the same level. But they're trying to, you know, by doing so, with the demand continuing to go up, it's going to make sure that they, hopefully for them, for producers, that they don't end up with an oversupply. So, you know what that might mean, I'm no economist and I'm no wine economist, but what I think this might mean is that, you know, prices maybe go up a buck or two on some things like that. And we're, of course, just talking about champagne made there in France. But I don't think it's really going to make too much of a difference. If anything, it'll pretty much be stay the course. So good news from champagne overall, I think. Good for the producers there. Not going to really hurt us as consumers too much. Really shouldn't. And hopefully the quality of this year's harvest is good. It's early. It'll be interesting to see how things go. But that's news from the champagne world for you, friends. Pop. You know, uncork, pop a bottle of bubbly there and celebrate. Here you go. Friends, a little bit of a programming note for next week. As you know, we taped a whole bunch of interviews there at Tales of the Cocktail, and we're continuing to run some of those. That event was now 3 weeks ago. All of these wonderful interviews that we did, mostly with producers, brand ambassadors, different people from all kinds of different facets of the spirit world, if you will, the spirits world. Want to make sure we're clear here on that, is... They're, you know, we didn't really talk about any timely stuff. It's all very interesting stuff about what they do, what they make. We have some more stuff coming up on whiskey. We have some stuff coming up on Irish whiskey, a bunch of craft liqueurs from Europe I can think of off the top of my head. There's a lot more to come. So we're going to, that's at least at this point, that's the plan this week, is we're going to run some more of those really fascinating interviews that we hadn't quite gotten to yet. And we'll do that again, peppered out in the next 2 to 3 shows. We'll have some stuff going on in between, of course, different things that we're going to talk about. I know a little bit later on, we're going to get into fall beers in a few weeks and some other interesting things. So stay tuned for more. You can always check us out at noladrinks.com. That's where you can find the podcast. You can find the podcast on Google Play, TuneIn Radio, Apple, iTunes there, of course, and Stitcher. We're streaming on TuneIn as well, and we're streaming on Shoutcast and a few other places in the very near future as well. So stay tuned for that. So please go subscribe to the podcast. I really appreciate that. Connect with us on social media at Nola Drinks. And we'd love to hear from you. If you have ideas for the show, things like that, hey, let us know. Friends, really appreciate you tuning in. Have a great weekend. Maybe we'll see you out there at the Red Dress Run. I'm probably not doing that one, but we will be at Dirty Linen tonight. So come say hi if you see us. We'll be wandering around on the street there. And have a good, safe weekend. Stay dry. Be smart out there on the roads, friends. And until then, cheers, y'all.